Tuesday, February 6th, was a full Washington day. In the morning, I briefed myself through old tapes, old notes, conversations, in preparation for my interview with Howard K. Smith, who is writing a book about this administration. There will be a flux of them, no doubt, and mostly bad. If there's any light I can shed to point up the constructive side, the human side, I'd better try. I had lunch on a tray in my dressing room, recorded, went to Mr. Pierce for a comb out, returned to the White House to work at my desk, though groggily because it had been an awful night. Lyndon and I had gone to sleep around 1 o'clock, and then, sometime later, the telephone had jerked us awake, the Situation Room. Lyndon's voice was tense, earnest, close, and I lay there taut with apprehension and completely impotent to help. It rang again and again during the night at intervals. Once I looked at the clock, it was 5:20, and at 7, Lyndon turned on the light, and the real day began. These mornings, Larry Temple and Bill Blackburn have begun coming in, taking turns handling the night reading, which Lyndon has finished the night before. For 2 years, it was Smiling Jake Jacobson. Before that, Jack Valenti. And more recently, for a good long while, Marvin Watson. He still comes, but not every morning. So in the middle of the afternoon, I had tea with 6 ambassadors' wives. They were escorted by Virginia Rusk, who is as calm and imperturbable as her husband, and pretty little Sylvia Symington. We sat in the yellow room, the tea table full of delicious things, and Sylvia pouring. There was Mrs. Malikyar of Afghanistan, a finely chiseled patrician face. Gentle and quiet, she spoke little English, but her daughter Leela interpreted Vara. It was very easy in the language. 3 ladies from Africa, Mrs. O'Heen of Togo, Mrs. Hyde of Sierra Leone, whose English had a definite British accent, Mrs. Badinga of Gabon, who came quite late, and no wonder with 8 children to get settled, and only in this country about 2 weeks. She was bright and interested, but spoke only French, and I found it difficult to penetrate. The most interesting woman of the group, a forceful, attractive woman whom I would like to know better, was Mrs. Michałowski, the wife of the ambassador from Poland. She had piercing blue eyes and seemed to be taking in everything. I talked to her about the heavy Polish concentration in our own old 10th district and over Texas. She seemed to know a great deal about it. And when we skipped to the subject of art, she said that the dealers tell her that there are now in Texas some heavy buyers in the art field, some wonderful private collections. How funny that the wife of the ambassador from Poland should be telling me about art collections in Texas. She's the sort of a bright, alert woman that if she were a citizen of our country, I'd try to get her interested in working for the Democratic Party. And there was Mrs. Kim from Korea in her native dress, a dignified, handsome woman, but her English not very good. I told her how shocked and incensed we were at the assassination attempt from President Park, and how glad we were that he was all right. And there was pretty little Mrs. Atakan from Thailand, sunny-faced, very feminine, wearing a pink and green Thai print. She says they've only been making the prints for about 10 years. After a while, I changed seats with Virginia, and later with Bess, so that I could move around the room and talk to each lady. It was a pleasant enough meeting, but sometimes I have a wild impulse. Say, for instance, to the lady from Korea, tell me what's on your mind most. I took them on a tour through the Lincoln Room, the Queen's Room, the Treaty Room, Mrs. Michałowski asking most of the questions, and said goodbye a little past 4. Then there were 2 more brief meetings. The first to meet Dr. Persia Camel. She and Betty Furness, the panel who will talk to us at our next Women Doers Luncheon, on this one on consumer problems. And everything must be prepared for. We had asked her down here. Liz and some more of the staff had spent several hours talking to the 2 of them about how we could make the most out of the luncheon, what points we should try to get over for the press to elicit from the other ladies. How could we use this for a tool to express the administration's aims? And I came in at the end to meet her and get my own briefing and express appreciation. Everything has to be worked at beforehand. That is, if it's any good. And then the next was a brief and pleasant meeting over a cup of tea in the library, one of my favorite rooms. The bright-faced, eager-eyed little girl, Anna Lazarus, who's the first recipient of a scholarship granted by a Jewish ladies group to a woman student at Yeshiva University's Stern College. The scholarship enables the student to study some facet of poverty, and it's named in honor of me. Ann Lazarus was accompanied by Mrs. Nathan Wadler, the national president of the women's group. It was a happy meeting because Ann Lazarus was so full of the buoyant optimism of youth, the feeling that she could make some little contribution to the attack on poverty. When I asked her what she was doing, what she was studying, I was a little dampened. The description got into so much departmentalese until she began to launch on how in studying one particular segment of the Jewish population that lived in Williamsburg, the part of New York, I suppose, was quite a low-income group, they nevertheless had a very low rate of juvenile delinquency. Immediately your mind jumped to family authority, family closeness. That was it, she thought. Ah, but how to translate this into those segments of the population where there aren't those generations of filial strength. We had tea. Bob Knudsen took a picture. I dispatched them on a tour of the White House with my earnest thanks and high hopes. And then there began what is undoubtedly one of the funniest interviews since I have been in the White House. The young lady from Sports Illustrated who wants to talk to me about bowling. We talked in the little Lincoln sitting room. It was easy, and if anything can be innocuous, surely it's bowling. And then we went over to the alley, and that two photographers and Bob Knudsen took pictures, and I bowled a very bad first game, and then, to my overwhelming surprise, an almost star second game for me, 174. I seldom make it. Unfortunately, they were only taking pictures of me and not of the balls as they fell. Back on the second floor, I had two long conversations with Dr. Grover about the library. I try to do a little work on it about 2 days of each week. And then, with a lifting heart, put on my black lace dress with the pretty white bow at the neck and went over to Lyndon's office. We were going out to dinner to the Monroney's. It's one of the nicest things that happens to us. Once or twice a year, we have dinner with them in their garden if it's summer. I was surprised and relieved that Lyndon was really going. We arrived late, found the most pleasant company one could hope to assemble. Marnie and Clark, Carol and Abe, distinguished General Maxwell Taylor and his wife, and the Bill Whites. Mary Ellen and Mike's house is a beautiful foil for fun. A distinguished, charming house. A whole glass wall that opens onto the garden. Chinese screen. One of a family brought it from China. Beautiful jade here and there. A melange of art. A good deal of it oriental. A very modern painting. Quaint, gay Chinese children. Her own granddaughter in a costume and in the manner of Renoir. And very good portraits of Mary Ellen's grandfather and her great-grandfather. Somehow that speaks volumes to me. And the whole house warmed. Pictures of the figures of Washington life that they've known through the years, including President Roosevelt. It was just the sort of evening we needed. Nobody heurried us in to dinner or any time. While we had a drink, Lyndon was in earnest conversation with the general. And then the most delicious dinner. And I was glad to see Lyndon enjoyed it. He's adhered strictly to this stringent diet of his. He's held his weight down to about 203 or 204, so he doesn't get his exercises since we returned from the ranch. But I think it's the most enormous tour de force of will that he can stick to his diet through these hellish days. There were no formal toasts, but over coffee, we just began to talk. Our host, sitting down, a warm, strong toast. And then, around the table, the Clark and Abe adding his humor, and Marnie, sweet and sentimental, and then Lyndon, who said the most straightforward, simple, and yet somehow touching thing. I'm glad there's one house in this town where I can come without getting into trouble or getting in the papers or getting mad and talk and laugh with good old friends and just rejoice in companionship and a full-hearted toast to our host and hostess. It was a delightful 3-hour reprieve. We left early and went back to the White House to our diet of Kisan and Hui and the Pueblo and fractious factions everywhere. Southeast Asia, the Senate, segments of our own country.